Hi there, and welcome to the Cory Doctorow podcast. An apology first for the recording problems last week. It's entirely my fault. Screwed up, changed the levels, didn't check my level, and didn't notice that I was getting all kinds of spikes. John Taylor Williams did his very best to fix it, did what he could. I thought it sounded pretty good, but it was absolutely the reader's fault and not the engineer's. What news? Well, I had my little hip procedure on Friday, had a needle all the way through the hip socket, and the conclusion was, yep, I probably should have this surgery. So I'm having one final second opinion. And then, well, I guess we're going to schedule this surgery, and they're going to break my hip and cut open my hip capsule and shave my femur down, change the shape of the bone, stitch me all up. I'll be in recovery for about 6 months, and then they should know whether or not this is going to make my back stop hurting. I'm actually kind of glad that it went through, if only because, you know, this is something that they're reasonably sure will actually help my back, and my back's been really bad for several years now. It'd be great to kind of get past that. Tonight, if you're in London, I'll be at the Westminster Skeptics. This is a society that meets once a month in Westminster, as you may have gathered from the name. And I'm going to be there with Tom Watson, who's a kind of rebel Labour MP who led the political fight against the Digital Economy Act. We're going to talk about copyright and the future of copyright. Same kind of thing I normally talk about. And next week, I'm going to be giving a presentation at the Amazing Meeting in London. This is a kind of similar group, actually. It's James Randi and a number of other prominent skeptics. Darren Brown will be there, people who are for rationality and science. I think Ben Goldacre is speaking, and I hope to see you there too. And then coming up in the future, I've got I'm going to be in I'm going to be in Iowa, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, for something called ICON on the 4th of November. And then I'll be in San Francisco on the 8th of November to host and MC the Pioneer Awards for Electronic Frontier Foundation. So if you're anywhere near any of those places, I hope to see you. What other news? Well, with a little help, the website is now pretty much ready to launch. I've just asked for one or two more little tweaks, and then I have to paste some text into some various fields that's already written, and then we're ready to go. I think the Lulu deal is pretty much sewn up, so I'm hoping we can get this launched by the end of the week. And what other news? I hope by the end of today I'll have signed a new lease on an office in Hackney, in fact in the same building as the London Hackspace, who I'm very excited to be sharing an office building with, if for no other reason than it spares me the expense of buying my own 3D printer, which I've been considering doing, but they have a very nice one. Also, access to a laser cutter just seems too cool to even ponder. I'm just trying to, you know, get my head around what I will do once I own, once I have permanent access to a laser cutter. It's going to be very fun. Well, that's all the news that's fit to print. Let's get on with the reading, shall we? Here's a little more from Jury Service. This is the first of two novellas that Charlie Strauss and I wrote together about Hugh. We're writing a third one called Parole Board, and it will be put together with the first two by Tor Books, and published under a single title, under a single set of covers, and it will be called Rapture of the Nerds. Here we go. The Marriott is not a Marriott. It's a Revolutionary Progress hostel. There are real hotels elsewhere in Tripoli, but they all charge real hotel bills, and the government is trying to run the tech jury service on the cheap. Hugh's gin spiels a little rantlet about Colonel Gaddafi's critique of trademarks and explains that this is the People's Marriott, where the depredations of servile labor have been eliminated in favor of automated conveniences, the maintenance and disposition of which is managed by a residence committee, and primly admonishes him for being 20 minutes late to his first committee meeting, which is to run for another 2 hours and 40 minutes. "Can't I just go to my room and have a wash?" Hugh asks. "I'm filthy." "Ah, 1,000 pardons, madam. Would that our world was a perfect one and the needs of the flesh could come before the commonweal. It is, however, a requirement of residence at the People's Marriott. You need to attend and be assigned a maintenance detail, and be trained in the chores you are to perform. The common room is wonderfully comfortable, though, and your fellow committee members will be delighted to make you most very welcome indeed." "Crap," Hugh says. "Yes," the djinn says, "of course. You'll find a WC to your left after you pass through the main doors." Hugh stalks through both sets of automatic doors, which jutter and groan open and creak shut. The lobby is a grandiose atrium with grimy, spun diamond panes 15 meters above his head, through which streams gray light that it feeds a riotous garden of root vegetables and xeriscaped desert scrub. His vision clouds over, then a double row of shady blinking lights appear before him, strobing the way to the common room. Hugh heaves a put-upon sigh and shambles along their path. The common room is hostel chic, filled with sagging sofas, a sad and splintery game surface, and a collection of half-dozen morose international travelers clutching at their teapots and scrawling desultorily on a virtual whiteboard. The collaborator space is cluttered with torn-off sheets of whiteboard, covering every surface. Doc Bjork has beaten him there, and she is already in the center of the group, animatedly negotiating for the lightest detail possible. "Hugh," she calls, as he plants himself in the most remote sofa, which coughs up a cloud of dust, and stale farts, smelling of the world's variegated cuisines. He lifts one hand weakly and waves. The other committee members are staring at him coldly, with a glint of feral calculation in their eyes, and Hugh has a feeling he's about to get the shittiest job in the place. "Mitigate the risk," he thinks. "Hi there, I'm Hugh. I'm here on jury duty, so I'm not going to be available during the days. I'm also a little, toxic at the moment, so I'll need to stay away from anything health-related. Something in the early evening, not involving food or waste systems, would be ideal, really. What fits the bill?" He waits a moment while the teapots chatter translations from all over the room. Hugh hears Arabic, Farsi, Hindi, Spanish, French, and American. Various whiteboards are reshuffled around the room, and finally, a heroically ugly Frenchman who looks like an albino chimp squeaks some dependencies across the various boards with a stylus. He coughs out a rapid and hostile stream of French, which the teapot presently translates. "You'll be on comms patrol. There's a transceiver every 3 meters. You take spare parts around to each of them, reboot them, watch the power on self-test, and swap out any dead parts. Even number floors tonight, odd floors tomorrow, guest rooms the day after." He tosses a whiteboard at Hugh, and it snaps to, centimeters from his nose, a crawl with floor plans and schematics for broadband relay transceivers. "Well, that's done," Hugh says. "Thanks." Bjork laughs. "You're not even close to done. That's your tentative assignment. You need to get checked out on every job in case you're reassigned due to illness or misadventure." "You're kidding," he says, rolling his eyes. "I am not. My assignment is training new committee members. Now, come and sit next to me. The Training and Skills Assessment Subcommittee is convening here." Hugh zooms out during the endless subcommittee meetings that last into the early evening, then suffers himself to be dragged to the hotel refectory by Doc Bjork and a dusky Romanian Lothario from the Cordon Bleu catering committee, who cast pointed and ugly looks at him until he slouches away from his baklava and dispiritedly climbs the unfinished concrete utility stairwell to sublevel 1, where his toil is to begin. He spends the next 4 hours trudging around the endless sublevels of the hotel, bare concrete corridors optimized for robotic and not human access, hunting buggy transceivers. By the time he gets to his room, he's exhausted, footsore, and even more sweaty. Hugh's room is surprisingly posh, but he can't appreciate it. He looks at the oversized sleep surface and sees the maintenance regimen for its control and feedback mechanism. He spins slowly in the spa-sized loo, and all he can think about are the poxy little bots that patrol the plumbing and polish the tile. The media center is a dismal reminder of his responsibility to patrol the endless miles of empty corridor, rebooting little silver mushrooms and watching their blinking lights for telltale reds. He fills the pool-sized tub with steaming lavender and eucalyptus-scented water, then climbs in, burka and all. The gin's lamp perches on the tub's edge, getting soaked in oversloshes as he shifts his weight, watching the folds of cloth flutter in aquatic slow-mo as its osmotic layers convect gentle streams of water over his many nooks and, especially, crannies. "Esteemed sir," the gin says, its voice echoing off the painted tile. "Figured that one out, huh?" Hugh says. "No more, madam?" "My infinite pardons," it says. "I have received your jury assignment. You are to report to the Fifth People's Technology Court at 800 hours tomorrow. You will be supplied with a delicious breakfast of fruits and semolina and a cold lunch of local delicacies. You should be well rested and prepared for a deliberation of at least 4 days. "Sure thing," Hugh says, ducking his head and letting the water rush into his ears. He resurfaces and shakes his head, spattering the walls with water that's slightly gray with bodily ick. "How far is the courthouse?" "A mere 2 kilometers. The walk through the colorful and ancient Tripoli streets is both bracing and elevating. You will arrive in a most pleasant and serene state of mind." Hugh kicks at the drain control, and the tub gurgles itself empty, reminding him of the great water reclamation facilities in the sub-basement and their various osmotic tissues and dams. He stands, and the burka steams for a moment as every drop of moisture is instantly wrung loose from its weave. Pleasant and serene. Yeah, right. He climbs tiredly out of the tub and slouches towards the bedroom. What time is it? It is 2:15, esteemed sir, says the djinn. Would sir care for a sleeping draught? Sir would care for a real hotel, Hugh grunts, then lies down on the enormous white rectangle that occupies the center of the bedroom. He doesn't hear the djinn's reply. He's asleep as soon as his head touches the pillow. A noise like cats fucking in a trash can drags Hugh awake at promptly 00:00. What's that? He yells. The djinn doesn't answer. It's prostrate on the bedside table as if hiding from an invisible overhead axe blade. The noise gets louder, if anything, then modulates into chickens drowning in their own blood, with a side order of Van Halen guitar riffs. Make it stop! Shouts Hugh, stuffing his fingers in his ears. The noise dies to a distant wail. A minute later it stops, and the djinn flickers upright. My apologies, esteemed sir, it says dejectedly. I did not put the room sound system mixer volume control interface correctly. That was the most blessed Imam Anwar Muhammad calling the faithful to prayer, or it would have been if not for the feedback. Hugh rolls over and grabs the teapot. Djinn? Yes, O esteemed sirrah. Hugh pauses me. You keep calling me that, he says slowly. Do you realize just how rude that is? Eep, rude, you appear to be squeezing. Listen, Hugh is breathing heavily. He sits up and looks out the window at the sleeping city. Somewhere, 100 gigameters beyond the horizon, the sun might be thinking about the faint possibility of rising. I am a patient man, but if you keep provoking me like this... Like what? This hostel, the fucking alarm clock, talking down to me, repeatedly insulting my intelligence. I'm not insulting! Shut up. Hugh blows out a deep breath. Unless you want me to give you a guided tour of the hotel waste compactor and heavy metal reclamation subsystem from the inside. Oop! The djinn shuts up. That's better. Now, breakfast. I want, let's see, fried eggs, bacon rashers, pork sausages, toast with butter on it, piles of butter. Don't argue. I've had a gray market LDL anti-cholesterol hack. Oh yeah, black pudding. Tell your little friends in the canteen to have it waiting for me. There is no or else for you to grasp at, you horrible little robot. You're going to do this my way, or you're not going to do very much at all, ever again. Hugh stands up and stretches. A plank with the pinky remote, and his bicycle unlocks and stretches too, folding itself into shopping mall mode. Memory metal frames are one of the few benefits of high technology, in Hugh's opinion, along with the ability to eat 7 different flavors of grease for breakfast and not die of a heart attack before lunchtime. Got that? I told them, but they say these Turkish food processors, they don't like working with non-halal. The djinn shuts up at Hugh's snarl. Hugh picks up the teapot, hangs it from the bike's handlebars, then pedals off down the hotel corridor with blood in his eye. I wonder what my chances are of getting a hanging judge. Hugh pedals to the end of the hotel's drive and hangs a left, following the djinn's directions, rides 2 more blocks, turns right, and confronts a wall of humanity. It's a good old-fashioned throng. From his vantage point atop the saddle, it seems to writhe, a mass of variegated robes and business attire, individuals lost in the team. He studies it for a moment longer, and sees that for all its density, it's moving rather quickly, though with little regard for personal space. He dismounts the bike and extrudes its kickstand. Planting his hands on his hips, he belches up a haram gust of bacon grease and ponders. He can always lock up the bike and proceed afoot, but nothing handy presents itself for locking. The djinn is manifesting a glowing countdown timer, ticking away the seconds before he will be late at court. Just then, the crowd shits out a person, who makes a beeline for him. Hello, Adrian, Hugh says, once the backpacker is within shouting distance, about 60 centimeters given the din of footfalls and conversations. Hugh is somehow unsurprised to see the backpacker again, clad in his travel wear and rakish stubble, eyes as red as a baboon's ass after a night's hash-taking. Well, fancy, says Adrian. Out for a bit of a ride? No, actually, replies Hugh, on my way somewhere and running late. Do you think I can ride around this crowd on another street? The backpacker snorts. Sure, if you ride to Tunisia. That's not going to do you much good here, I'm afraid. And don't think about locking it up, mate, or it'll be nationalized by the popular low-impact transit committee before you've gone 3 steps. Shit, grunts Hugh. He gestures at the bike, and it deflates and compacts itself into a carry case. He hefts it. The fucking thing weighs a ton. Yup, Adrian agrees cheerily. Nice to have if you want to go on a tour of the ruins or get somewhere at 3 a.m. Not much good otherwise, though. Want to sell it to me? I met a pair of sisters last night who are going to take me off to the countryside for a couple of days of indoctrination and heavy petting. I'd love to have some personal transport. Fuck, says Hugh. He's had the bike for 7 years. It's an old friend, jealously guarded. How about if I rent it to you? Adrian grins and produces a smoke saver from one of the many snap pockets on his chest. A nugget of hash smolders inside the plastic tube, a barely visible coal in the thick smoke. He puts his mouth over the end and slurps down the smoke, holds it for a thoughtful moment, then expels it over Adrian's head. Lovely. I'll return it in 2 days. 3 tops. Where are you staying? The fucking Marriott. Wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. Here, will this be enough? He hands Hugh a foil-wrapped brick of Assassin brand hash, the size of a paving stone. The sisters are into hashishim revival. Quite versatile minds they have. Hugh is already copping a light buzz from the side stream Adrian's blowing his way. This much hash will likely put him in a 3-day incontinence coba, but someone might want it, he supposes. Tell you what, he says, let's call this a deposit. You can have it back for the safe return of the bike in 4 days at the Marriott, all right? Adrian works his head from side to side. Sure, mate. Works for me. Shame you don't trust me to return the bike on my own, but that's how it is, I suppose. Okay, but you better bloody look after it. That bike has sentimental value. We've come a long way together. Hugh whispers into the bike's handlebars and hands it to Adrian. It interfaces with his pan, accepts him as its new erstwhile owner, and unfolds. Adrian saddles up, waves once, and pedals off for points rural and lecherous. Hugh holds the gin's lamp up and hisses at it. Right, he said. Get me to the court on time. With the utmost of pleasure, sirrah, it begins. Hugh gives it a sharp shake. All right, then, it says. Let me teach you to say out of my bloody way, and we'll be off.
You've been listening to the Cory Doctorow Podcast, licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-alike US 3.0. Or as Woody Guthrie put it in another context, this song is copyrighted in the US under Seal of Copyright 154085 for a period of 28 years, and anyone caught singing it without our permission will be a mighty good friend of ourn, because we don't give a dern. Publish it, write it, sing it, swing to it, yodel it, we wrote it, that's all we wanted to do. Many thanks to John Taylor Williams for mastering. That's Ryneck Studio, Ryneck Studio at gmail.com. John Taylor Williams is a full-time self-employed audio engineer, producer, composer, and sound designer. In his free time, he makes beer, jewelry, odd musical instruments, and furniture. He likes to meditate, to read, and to cook. Talk to you next week.